Our starting point for taming the tongue will be, any guesses?
James.
Very good.
James.
Although we will bounce around a bit, if I can find it.
Chapter 1.
Yeah, Hebrews and James. James, there's a little bit in 1, but I'm going to start with 3. And then we will go to other places in the Old Testament and New Testament. 3, verse 1. My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits into horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn the whole body. Look also at ships, although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt, water, and fresh. I'll stop there and back up. First of all, those that use their tongue to teach, which I am now doing, should not do so in any sort of flippant and cocky way, because he makes it really clear that we will receive stricter judgment. Anytime you presume to teach, you have to make sure that you're not just governed. And when you are teaching, you're affecting a bigger sphere of lives. And the larger the the larger the body, I would presume stricter judgment, because you are affecting more people and can affect their lives for the better or the worse, lead them in greater holiness or in lead them away from holiness. Now, verse 2, I want to spend some time on the tongue in both generally and specifically. We all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he's a perfect man. Now, say, well, wait a minute. If we can just make our tongues behave, regardless of what's in here, we're perfect. And we all know, and I'll point out a few verses, that the Bible is very clear on hypocrisy. But here it's saying, if he never is at fault in what he says, he's a perfect man. In other words, even when you're a hypocrite and you know how to polish your speech in certain instances, like around the pastor, around the teacher, and you're covering up things, then you're not perfect, but you appear to be, at least in that situation. But here, it's talking about if you don't stumble, period, in word, that means you're perfect. Now, but a hypocrite is not perfect across the board. They may clean up their speech in certain arenas, but they can't all the time. Their pastor might think that they're really got it together, because they clean up their speech around the pastor, but they go home and they pop out their hypocritical filter and bang it out on their wife, and then all sorts of things are revealed. Or your roommate, your pastor might think, you know, all sorts of people might think you got it together spiritually, but your roommate knows better. Your wife or your husband or your brother, your sister knows better. But if you're never at fault in what you say across the board, that means that there's a strong indication that you're perfect, but that's never the case. Let's look at a few instances, just a couple instances of the hypocrisy. The first one is in Psalms 28. There's other passages, but 28:3, about someone who can speak nicely, but their heart is in no way a match for what their mouth is doing. Verse 3, Psalm 28:3. Do not take me away with the wicked and with the workers of iniquity, who speak peace to their neighbors, but evil is in their hearts. NIV says, who speak cordially with their neighbors, but harbor malice, or something like that, in their heart. And we see this sometimes, well, all cultures to a certain extent do this, but some cultures are even more polite than others. I know that being polite is one of the highest social virtues in certain countries. I know in Japan, where my mom was, I mean, it doesn't mean that they had clean hearts, but they were culturally very, very polite to their neighbor. And they may have hated the person's guts, but very, very, very sweet. And I'm not picking on them, because we're all like that to a certain extent. But some cultures are more transparent. They're ugly in here, and they just and let it all hang out. Let's look at Mark 7, another instance where Jesus, and actually it's a he's quoting the Old Testament in one place. Mark 7, 6. Jesus answered and said to them, Well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, as it is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, and in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. So here's another example of hypocrisy, where people have got their speech down, but their hearts are far from me. So I wanted to just kind of show that these passages aren't in disagreement. Here it's talking about you don't stumble in word across the board. Well, then, yeah, you are a perfect man. But people only clean up their act or clean up their speech in certain areas. Then it goes here. It says he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. And then he uses three illustrations. The first, bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, turn the whole body. Ships, although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Now, at first you're thinking, wait a minute, is he saying that the tongue has a mind of its own? Well, no. Based on the illustrations, it's real clear. A bit in the horse's mouth does not have a mind of its own. What's the bit? Who's controlling the bit to turn the horse?
Rider.
The rider. Okay. Now the rudder. Does the rudder have a mind of its own? No. Here it shows that the rudder is directed by the pilot. So in both cases, the tongue And sometimes we act as if the tongue has got a mind of its own. It's like, you bite your we say we bite our tongues. Like, it's got its own little brain, its own little ganglion, and then it's saying things. You go, I didn't mean to say that. Yes, you did, because the tongue doesn't have its own little brain or its own little heart. As much as we would like to say, we want to blame the tongue, but it's hardwired. The tongue is hardwired to our brain, and not to be materialist, our brain's hardwired to our heart. And we sometimes think materialistically by saying, well, everything that we do and say is just, it's just a product of our internal wiring and our external input. But if we are spiritual creatures, we know that our spirit or soul or whatever you want to, I'm not going to talk about the distinctions, that's not the point, but there's an interface between the spirit initiating speech. We can't just say it's our motor cortex in our brain that initiated all speech and I have nothing to do with it. Our heart is controlling what impulses, I'm trying to be a biologist, our brain is sending impulses to our tongue, and our heart, however, not talking about our cardiovascular heart, is telling our brain what to tell our tongues to say. Now, and it's whether it's the bit is like the tongue, the rider is the heart, the pilot, or the rudder is the tongue, the pilot is the heart, in terms of making the analogy. Even so, the tongue, in verse 5, is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. I like this illustration, too. I used to be on a fire crew up in northern Washington. And, our weekends were often ruined by somebody's hot exhaust pipe that just a tiny little spark sets a whole forest ablaze. Okay? And it's the same with the tongue. The tongue is controlled by the heart, but the tongue makes great boasts because a little word, like a little spark, can burn, as Patrick McManus says, a run-of-the-mill imbecile can casually flick a soggy cigar butt out of a car window and burn down half a national forest. And we can casually flick our tongue and literally destroy a lot of people, because it's not just that person who hears, but it's amplified by gossip, which is another sin of the tongue. And it just can really destroy a lot. The tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body. Not only does it defile, if we use it wrongly, defile outward, but it can defile, it can feed back. The heart initiates, the tongue says, but the tongue can either reinforce our behavior or there can be negative feedback. Fortunately, there's often negative feedback that our tongue, because of the consequences of our tongue, it can have consequences that are very, very unpleasant to us and can curb our behavior, at least our external behavior. It doesn't necessarily deal with the heart. But it can set the whole course of nature. And I think of one illustration. This is true of, I'm just going to use one particular sin of the tongue, gossip. As the proverb says, gossip is like choice morsels. They go down in most parts. When someone says some other juicy tidbit about somebody else, you know, if you are the conveyor of gossip, all ears are on you and jaws drop. Really? And people like that kind of response to that kind of thing. It's a positive reinforcement to the person. If everybody was just looking bored when you gossip, probably there wouldn't be so much gossip. But really, then it's a positive reinforcement that makes people want to do it more. Okay? And I'm sure I can draw other parallels with other sins, but gossip comes to mind. Another thing is if someone has a dirty heart and they tell dirty jokes and they get a lot of laughs, that's positive reinforcement and they do it more. It can set, well, like, and some, it sets the whole course of nature. In the, what does NIV say? Sets the whole
course
of your life on fire. Think of Eddie Murphy. You know, he got a lot of positive reinforcement, positive feedback by his crude humor, a lot of money from his crude humor, and because he got a lot of positive feedback, it set the whole course of his life on fire. It basically helped form that rut so that he continued to use his tongue in that way. Let's move on, as there's a lot of other passages I want to hit. For every kind of beast, bird, reptile, creature, the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. Okay? And that's a big claim. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Now I think here of it says deadly poison, I think of fangs and venomous snakes. But where's the poison coming from?
Inside.
The fang is just to get the poison from inside to outside. In the same way that the tongue is used, the poison's in the venom gland.
I think monitor lizards.
Yeah.
Then it is.
Oh, yeah.
But
it's still salivary glands, either poison glands or salivary glands. But then it runs through grooves or ducts through the teeth and then out. And, I'm not wanting to do a biology lesson here. The point here is that we can't tame the tongue. The tongue is hardwired to the heart, and we can't even circumcise our own heart. We can't do that. It's not something that can be controlled. Often Christians, and this is, I'll get into, there's lots of different analogies, some that are in the text, some that I'll, very similar ones that I'll bring to the floor. Many people say, I need to bite my tongue better. But that's not the solution. That's like a rattlesnake scene. I need to put a mini cork in the hole in my fang. You know? That's not dealing with the root problem. There's poison in, the poison wants to come out, and superficial solutions of tongue biting or, just using sheer willpower to overcome what wants to come out is not the solution. I don't want to be too gross, but if you're sick to your stomach, the solution is not trying to plug up your mouth so you won't vomit. The problem is inside. Okay? And we see that here. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Here in verse 9, it's talking about, what? You're using your tongue to bless, go to church, bless our Lord, praise our Father with various songs, and then we come home and ream out somebody, our roommate, our friend, our brother, our sister, mom or dad, spouse. With it we curse men. This, he says, in verse 10, out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Now you say, well, I don't understand it. My tongue runs hot and cold. You know, sometimes, you know, medicine comes out of my fang, and and sometimes poison comes out. Well, it's as we see here in this rhetorical question in verse 11, does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Well, what's the answer to that? No. Okay, but you see, but mine does. Well, here's the difference. Our heart can be, often when people have good things come out and then bad things come out, it's not because when they have good things, things are really good. They've mastered to a certain extent the art of hypocrisy with their tongue. You know, I know that I've been duped, you know, being a professor at Liberty. You know, the students, you know, are always in their best behavior with me, but then I hear through the grapevine what they're really doing. And was it because their spring was really, really fresh with me? And when they went back to the dorm, it was all of a sudden salt? No. It was salt. It was not good, but when they came around me, they put in a water filter that filtered out the salt. And that's what hypocrisy is. To use this water analogy, that's what hypocrisy is. It can filter temporally, filter out junk so that you can make a good impression to those people that you want to make a good impression with. But then when you go back to the dorms, you yank out your filter and let it all hang out. Here, though, he's trying to drive this point home. A fig tree, my brethren, in another illustration, bears can a fig tree bear olives? Answer, no. And grapevine bear figs? No. Thus, no spring yields both salt and fresh water. So if you feel like you are yielding both salt and fresh water, it's not because you went from this city water tank heart to a septic tank, and then a city water tank heart to a septic tank. It doesn't just change back and forth. You've got a filter problem. Okay. Now I'll pound this home a little more. Let's go to Matthew 12. Matthew 12:33. He uses the same analogy as far as fruit. Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For a tree is known by its fruit. Listen to his speech here. Brood of vipers. Now, most people, we gloss over that and go, he's making a point. How can you, being evil, speak good things? He just called them brood of vipers. That's not very... See what I'm saying? Jesus often uses some pretty strong language, and we have sometimes had a default that everything you say needs to be sweet and nice. Now, albeit we need to have our heart be clean so that good things come out of our mouth. But when Jesus was perfectly righteous, right? What did he just say? Brood of vipers. Okay, so we can't sometimes strong speech, provided that it comes from a clean heart. This is kind of a side point. This is not my main point. But sometimes strong speech is appropriate, providing that it's not coming from a haughty, arrogant heart that wants to denigrate somebody so that you can rise yourself, you know, raise yourself up and exalt yourself over them. Sometimes that type of speech is appropriate, provided that you are doing it in for their benefit. And, you know, calling the kettle black was appropriate here for Jesus to say. But let's go on to the main point. How can you, being evil, speak good things? Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And that was the verse that my mom quoted to us all the time when we were little, you know. When we'd say something, just kidding. Sometimes you truly are kidding, but often when we rip on our brother or sister, it might be totally in jest, and I think there's possibility for that. But sometimes we put in barbs, and then we couch it in just kidding, so we don't get in trouble. When really it was coming, we were trying to, you know, take them down a notch for our own exaltation, not for their benefit. A good man out of the good treasures of his heart brings forth good things. An evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say that to you, that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. So this, again, here's reinforces this whole concept. Your mouth brings out good, you speak what's in your heart. And yes, knowing those verses we covered, Psalm 28:3, Mark 7:6, there is allowance for hypocritical speech. But in general, to use another analogy, that's very similar to what was used here and in James. The heart is the well, and this is a faucet. Okay? The heart is the well, and this is a faucet. And we complicate our lives by trying to put in better filter systems. And what we need to do is, if there are bad things coming out of our faucet, and you turn your faucet on and you see this orange water coming out, it's probably not right there. There's a water problem deeper, okay? And it's the same here. Why complicate your life? Why is it, I got to just control my tongue? Yes, you do have to control your tongue, but the best way to control your tongue is by cleaning up the septic tank, you know, getting to the root of the problem. How do you do that? Confession. Getting back to the basics of Christianity, there are a whole milieu of sins of the tongue, and we'll cover a few of them, but in each one, let's name just a few. Just a random sample. Gossip. Okay? Lying. Coarse jesting. Dirty or body jokes. Losing your temper with your mouth. There are lots. The solution: confess those sins, clean up your heart, clean up the septic. Do you clean it up? No, the Lord Jesus cleans it up. If we confess our sins, He is faithful and just, and will forgive us our sins and cleanse us of all unrighteousness. We open up our heart and say, This is bad. The reason why I used barbed speech with people to tear them down so that I can exalt myself is because I'm insecure, and I want to lift myself up by lowering them. If that's the sin, often we're just confessing a symptom. What we need to do is confess the root of the problem. You know, if a lie comes out, we confess a deceitful heart, wanting to distort the truth for our own advantage somehow. Okay, so that's the basic solution. But don't just, we need to, he may have already covered confession of sin. Somebody probably did. Has that been?
No.
Repentance? Okay, yeah.
Every week.
Okay, good. And when we get down and dirty, literally, with specific sins of the heart, a lot of our speech just automatically clears up. You don't have to, you know, bottle yourself up. Now let's go to the Old Testament. I want to just give some different examples, Proverbs, different examples of how the tongue is used well and how it's not used well. A huge percentage of Proverbs deals with the tongue. And so this is by no means an exhaustive list, but these are just some verses I pulled out about the tongue. Proverbs, let's start in 12. Proverbs 12, 13. The wicked is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous will come through trouble. You see that in movies all the time, where the wicked, because they, in order to cover up their wickedness, they've got to be lying all the time and deceiving. And often it's very sophisticated lying, but if it's a very, very good detective, they can trap him.
Or a bumbling detective.
Or a bumbling detective.
Clouseau. Monk.
And the wicked are ensnared. They'll say something that basically betrays their plot, and they're ensnared by the transgression of their lips. But the righteous will come through trouble. If you're always speaking the truth, I mean, you might get in trouble, but it'll be, if you're speaking the truth in love, you might get in trouble, but it won't be shameful. You'll not feel like hanging your head in shame and being embarrassed about what your tongue said. A man, in verse 14, a man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth. Now, I might jump over some that you see, but let's go down to verse 17. He who speaks truth declares righteousness, but a false witness, deceit. Verse 18. There is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health. I'm sure you know people who, when you talk to them, it's not long before jabs start coming. It's just like jab, jab. Some of them aren't that hurtful, but some of them are. And after, some of them are just fairly trivial, but it's hard to spend a great deal of time with these types of people because they're constantly making remarks. It's like standing next to someone having a pin poked into you all the time. It's not very enjoyable. There's one who speaks like the piercings of a sword. The tongue of the wise promotes health. Now, there needs to be some clarification. We sometimes think that the tongue has to always be powder puff, the Christian powder puff tongue that basically says everything's got to just be superficial and nice. Okay? But here, remember, in the latter half of verse 18, it says, the tongue of the wise promotes health. Now, Let's say you had a malignant tumor under your skin. Will powder puff treatment take care of it? A surgeon has to use a scalpel. But what's he doing it for? To promote health. He has to make an incision, but it's a careful incision, it's a graceful incision, and it may hurt, but its motive is to promote health, remove the tumor. Powder puffs won't work. Niceness on that type of thing won't work. So we have to realize that the tongue of the wise isn't always nice in our sense of niceness. Remember what Jesus said, "You brood of vipers." John the Baptist, "You brood of vipers." Jesus also says, "You whitewash sepulchers." But he wasn't there just to raise himself, exalt himself, and rip them down for his own gratification. There was a reason he was doing it. Okay, and it was not a selfish, self-aggrandizing type reason. The truthful lip, verse 19, shall be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. Some people lie because they've gotten short-term benefit out of the lie. But after a while, lies require lies to cover up the lie. And then that secondary lie requires a tertiary lie to cover up the secondary lie, and so on. And it's just horrible. It is just horrible. A truthful lip shall be established forever. It's just... Now, jump down to chapter 13, 3. He who guards his mouth preserves his life. Again, guarding your mouth. I think of nowadays with the environmental concerns, there's all these water quality people that have to sample effluent and, you know, is this water good, is this water bad? And going back to the water analogy, we should guard our mouth. Not so we can decide, ooh, it's dirty, I need to cork it or I need to filter it, but I'm monitoring the speech quality, the water quality coming out. And when I monitor and I see some impurities, I don't say, ah, filter time. I say, ah, go back to the septic tank time and confess, clean up the root problem. He who opens wide his lips shall have destruction. Okay, I can go on and on. Let me just give you a few references that you can nick or highlight. 13:5, righteous man hates lying. 14:3, in the mouth of a fool is a rod of pride, but the lips of the wise will preserve them. 14:23, in all labor there's profit, but idle chatter leads only to poverty. There's a problem, even if you aren't going out to some place to gossip or tell bad jokes, you have no real agenda, you're just going out to jaw. And there can be there are times for that, but if there's a too much idle chatter and not enough working with one's hands, idle chatter can lead to poverty. And I can see that even around here. Just even in the Christian community, just too much hanging out. And there can be too much hanging out, too much idle chatter, even if the idle chatter isn't necessarily, you know, bad in content. I love this one. 15:1, Soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Again, this is just stating how it is. Solomon is stating how it is. Soft answers turn away wrath, but harsh words stir up anger. And often our harsh words are unnecessary and are because of a bad attitude or a bad heart. But as we've read the Gospels, and you'll see that Jesus did say some things to evoke some instant conflict. You know, he would say, you know, Abraham's our father. No, your father is the devil. You know, you travel over land and sea to win a single convert, and when you do, you make him twice as much a son of hell as you are. Things like that are words that really got the Pharisees going, got them upset. So this is stating how it is. But by and large, when we do it, we have to ask ourselves, what am I doing this for? Am I just being harsh to just promote strife for no good reason? The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools just pours forth foolishness. 4, a wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit. 7, verse 7, the lips of the wise disperse knowledge, but the heart of the fool does not do so. So that, again, that's just a little sample. There are a lot more in Proverbs. If you read through Proverbs in a few days, can be color code highlighters. It's just highlight all the tongue ones. You'll learn a lot. Okay. 15:23. A man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is. 16:13. Righteous lips are the delight of kings. 16:24. Pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones. 28, a perverse man sows strife. Okay? And a whisperer separates the best of friends. Okay, a perverse man sows strife. He likes to stir up things just for, I don't know, probably lots of reasons. 32, he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. He who rules his spirit than he who takes his city. Now think about it. Someone in NIV says he who controls his temper.
What chapter 16?
16:32. He who controls his, what does it say? What does it say?
16:32?
Mm-hmm.
Better a patient man than a warrior, a man who controls his temper than one who takes a city.
Think of that. Think of a general who can take a city. If you can control your temper, you're mightier than one who can conquer a city. It's just great. So anyway, I'll stop there. But I wanted to just tie things off. Let's go back. Actually, I want to end on a different verse, but again, we'll say the same basic thing. 1 Peter 3:8. This is good. It'll say some other things, but it will reinforce what we've been talking about. Finally, all of you, be of one mind, having compassion for one another. Love as brothers. Be tenderhearted. Be courteous. Not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. For he who would love life and see good days, okay, I would suppose that everyone here would like that. If you love life, would you like, everybody want to see good days? I do. He who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Refrain his tongue from evil. Okay, just as a quick summary. Whether we use fruit tree analogies or a spring analogy or a well analogy, the tongue just reflects what's inside. Hypocrisy, to a certain extent, can filter out the garbage. But the garbage inside will ultimately be revealed sooner or later, usually in certain contexts. People you just let your hair down with, so to speak. You come home, and those people are the ones that really see what's inside because of what comes out of your mouth. And the solution? No filter. You monitor, you guard your lips, you see what's coming out. If things aren't coming out good, if you have piercing words that rip people down, if you have gossip, if you have dirty jokes, if you have a mouth that uses the Lord's name in vain, you don't go, gee, wow, my tongue, what possessed my tongue to say that? You go to the source, you go to the root of the problem, which is the heart. And confess those specific sins. And any time impurities come into the heart, it's actually a blessing that our tongue says things that are in our heart, because it informs us. It's a litmus test. It informs us what's really inside, and informs others, much to our chagrin. Informs others what's inside, and that is often a blessing, because then if we can't even hear ourselves, other people can, and they can come to us and say, you know, that was inappropriate for you to say that, and then we can deal with the sin. But if everything was just bottled up inside, then we would often not see what's going on inside, unless it's really putrid. I'm not going to really expound on this, but I'll give you another passage that you can add to your studies on this, and I'm sure there you'll find others. Ephesians is big on the tongue. The end of 4, Ephesians chapter 4, and the beginning of 5. I'll just read the passages or the verses. Ephesians 4:25. Therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. 29. Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. One comment here. Some people get hyper-spiritual. You know what I mean? Say, okay, I've got to always edify. So, I've got to always be saying Bible verses and be very serious all the time. Here it says, what is good for necessary edification. A cheerful heart, as in Proverbs, is like, I don't know the passage, never was in Awana's.
Good medicine.
Good medicine. And sometimes a Bible verse is appropriate and is necessary edification. Sometimes a good, funny story about how you wiped out on a ski slope is necessary edification. When you sit around a room and you're telling stories, provided that they're wholesome stories and it's all light, sometimes that's exactly what we need. And we don't need heavy, heavy stuff. Okay? What we need is to do what's appropriate. Okay? Edification that it may impart grace to the hearers. Verse 31, let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. 5:4, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving thanks. Okay? There's time for light speech. There's time for heavy speech. Sometimes it's time for humor. Sometimes it's time for sobriety. Okay? Sometimes it's you wear tux, and sometimes you wear cutoffs. Okay? Provided that it's appropriate for the time. In terms of our using that as an example of our speech. Okay. And then one last passage, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in our heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. All right.